This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I am your other host, Kim.
Welcome to our first episode of Season 2 and our 22nd episode overall.
Woohoo!
Today we are doing a live-action Disney double feature review. The two films are Blackbeard's Ghost and Bedknobs and Broomsticks, both produced by Bill Walsh and directed by Robert Stevenson.
All right.
Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selection there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. So this is our big Season 2 kickoff.
All right. Let's do this.
Originally, we didn't plan to do a Disney double feature.
Yep.
But we had something come up.
Hello, little COVID in the house.
We got sick.
Yes.
Today's actually our last day of quarantine.
It is. So why not record a podcast?
We have nothing else to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, we were going to have some friends over and do a different movie, which we'll announce for later this year. But we're going to have them over to our house, have a cookout, do a podcast, have a lot of fun. But then COVID happened.
COVID did happen. Yes. Actually, I think since our last podcast of last season, COVID has now hit our house. If you count individual persons,
yeah,
this will be the fifth time it's hit our house, but right. Only four family members have had COVID. Somehow the youngest keeps getting skipped over, which I'm thankful for. I don't want him to have COVID. But yeah, I think our son had it at the end of July. Our daughter had it in September. And then our son just had it again, and then he shared it with us.
He shared it with us. This is our first time.
This is our first time. Our oldest, poor thing, has had it twice now. But he handles it like a champ. Honestly, he handled it way better than you or I have.
Yes.
So, meh.
Though, I don't know if I had the variant that's out right now.
No, I don't think you did, because you still can't smell or taste anything, right?
I've lost my taste and smell. Yeah, it's weird.
I didn't think what was going around now... that was happening with people. But anyhow, we're not doctors.
Yeah, who
knows?
Talk
to somebody about your COVID concerns.
So the last time we had an episode released was in July. It was our Attackies episode, season one finale.
That's right.
So what has been happening since July, just to catch everybody up?
All right, besides the COVIDs, oh gosh. Well, of course, kids started back to school. We had a trip to West Virginia. Got to hang with the West Virginia fam.
Yeah, that was
back
great.
In August.
My grandfather's 101st birthday.
That's right. We celebrated 101 years with Papa Ward, so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Then he's still going strong, and like we may get to go back to West Virginia for 102 this summer.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Yesterday we celebrated something.
Oh, this is true. Yes, I had a birthday. We've covered a lot of ground since from July till now, so a lot of things have happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, most recently, I have had a birthday.
Yes, yay.
Yay.
A COVID birthday.
A COVID birthday. Yeah, yeah. You guys treated me good, even though we were quarantined. We played Master Detective Clue, throwback, favorite board game. You guys even decorated the house with, I don't know, what would you call those?
They're like mystery party decorations.
So like, imagine paper magnifying glasses and bottles of poison and hangman's nooses and
wrench. Very Clue inspired.
They look like the parts to Clue, actually, is what they look like. It was fun. You guys did a good job. And you treated me to lots of books, which...
We threw the book at her.
You did. Well, multiple books at me.
Yes.
Which is great. And they did not literally throw them at me, thankfully, or I would be much more battered and bruised today than I am.
You're an avid reader, though, so you'll get through those fairly quickly, I think.
I hope. I mean, life gets in the way, but yeah. Nothing like a good book.
Well, so also, since you last heard from me, I took 2 months to study for my GIAC Certified Incident Handler exam.
It's called the GCIH. Those are words that people say.
Yeah, they're not many people know them. But I passed my test in December. Basically, it's an IT security certification.
Yeah.
So when you last heard from us, you know, earlier in season one, I'd switched jobs at my same company. Basically, now I'm fully immersed in security threats, vulnerability management, penetration testing, incident response, all these cool buzzwords.
Yeah.
I do know.
If you're an IT person, you probably know what he's talking about. The rest of us smile and nod. Good job, Jeff. Good job.
Yes, I'm certified. Thank God. As far as what have we been watching? Something that was cool that we were looking forward to that we mentioned last season was the release of Dune.
It finally came out.
It finally came out after like a year delay.
Yeah.
And we saw it on opening night, and we saw it twice.
Did I see it twice? I saw it once. You saw it twice.
Maybe I saw it twice.
Jefferson saw it three times, I think.
Yeah, he did.
Like, I think he saw it two nights in a row, even.
So our oldest son's favorite book is Dune by Frank Herbert.
Yes.
He's read that at least twice.
I don't even know. Yes.
And he saw the movie literally three times in opening weekend.
Yeah, he did. Or close to opening weekend.
But so I was really looking forward to it. You know, many of you know one of my favorite movies of all time is Blade Runner 2049.
Right.
It's a lot of the same team that did this movie. The same director, Denis Villeneuve. The same, you know, music composer, Hans Zimmer, the classic guy.
Yeah.
The landscapes, visual effects were amazing. Timothée Chalamet was basically the perfect Paul Atreides. It was a great first part of the Dune book. I can't wait for the second part.
Yeah, which is, and as you guys probably know, like, I'm not a huge sci-fi aficionado. I've never read the book, but the movie was stunning. I really enjoyed, like, the movie was visually stunning. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. It was gorgeous to look at. It's different. You know, I think that's what we talked about. Like, you watch so many movies that are like superhero movies.
Right.
And those are fun and those are entertaining. We talk about those. We're not elitist and say we don't like them or anything.
No.
But these feel more serious, more important.
I will say, like, I feel like it's a, you mentioned comparing it to a superhero movie. Those are very fast paced and it's just like action, action, action. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you're looking for.
Right.
But this is more of a contemplative feel.
Yeah.
You know, the story takes time to tell and there's more of watching and waiting and reading the responses of actors, not necessarily in dialogue or concept. Not that there's not action, because there's definitely action in the movie, but it's just a lot slower paced. And I do appreciate some good, slow storytelling. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of Blade Runner 2049 in that aspect, because, you know, I felt like I heard a lot of people say it was slow. And some people even dared to say it was boring.
Ouch.
If you're not... If you're not up for a slow moving story, or just slow paced storytelling, then yeah, maybe you won't love it, but I don't know. It was great. I think you have to see it. If you didn't see it on the big screen, it is a shame. You should have seen it.
Oh, yeah.
It's shame, you know, shame on you.
I'm all for watching a movie from the comfort of home, but I can see where you would lose a lot from that movie by not seeing it on the big screen with the big surround sound.
Mm-hmm.
That was really nice.
Right.
Yeah.
We saw another Timothée Chalamet movie.
That's maybe right.
2 months ago?
Yeah. And we've mentioned, I think we started mentioning last season, we were kind of late to the game learning to like Wes Anderson movies. Like,
yeah.
we're new to following the Wes Anderson style of movie making. And so we were kind of excited when we heard he had a new one coming out. French Dispatch was coming out. So we got to see that over the break too. And I got to say, it's not my favorite so far.
Yeah. I think we've seen four Wes Anderson films, and it's probably our least favorite so far.
Probably, yeah. And I will, you know, we're just talking about slow storytelling versus a fast kind of in-your-face action. This wasn't necessary. Obviously, it's not an action movie. It's an ode to journalism. Mm-hmm. But the way the dialogue comes at you so fast in this movie, it almost felt, it felt fast-paced, especially for a Wes Anderson movie, because he's not known for fast-paced movies either.
Right.
But this felt fast-paced for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, there was a lot of exposition.
Yeah.
It was just kind of, I felt like I wanted to watch the whole thing with subtitles on and speed read, because there was just so much coming at me. But
yeah, because it was an ode to journalism, there was just so much exposition.
Right.
Which was just different than a normal Wes Anderson film. And also, it was an anthology film.
Right.
You know, it was comprised of three or four short stories. And I don't know if they all clicked either.
Yeah, not necessarily. It seemed like he was trying to get a lot into each of those short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them I liked more than others.
Sure.
I still enjoy his aesthetic. I like the way he makes films. I like the way they look and just kind of the quirkiness about them.
Right.
But yeah, it's not my favorite, this one.
Yeah, we've talked about this several times with Wes Anderson films. You tend to think about them for a day or two after
exactly.
You see the film.
I do appreciate that about his filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
for sure. Okay, we are talking about two movies today. So there's going to be spoilers for both. If you don't want to hear spoilers, hit pause, come back and join us later. The first movie we're going to talk about is Blackbeard's Ghost from 1968. It is an old Disney live action film. It takes place on the Carolina coast. We've got an old inn that's run by some old spinsters that claim to be descendants of Blackbeard's ghost, the old pirate guy, you know, that's famous. Mm-hmm. Edward Teach, I believe, was his real name, right? So they're about to lose their inn because some swindling, I don't know, mobster type guys have moved in and want to turn it into a big casino, and they need help rescuing their inn. And so in comes the local college's new track coach, who unwittingly somehow unlocks or summons Blackbeard's ghost. And through his crazy antics and his piratey ways, he's going to help these old ladies save the inn and, you know, save the day.
When did you first see this film? Do you remember?
I don't remember exactly, but as a kid, you and I grew up in the same town, but on opposite ends of the town. My elementary school would always, we would have field day, and then like you would get a movie in the afternoon, or you'd get a movie, like your, the whole fifth grade class would get to watch a movie for doing well on a test or something. I don't know why, but there were always like these random movie days at school, right?
Right.
Not often. It was like a big treat and they would serve popcorn or something. So they always picked from this genre of Disney movies, these live action kind of 1960s, early 70s Disney movies. These were always our, and Blackbeard's Ghost, I'm sure, was probably one of those because it fits the right in that vein. So I would say either I saw it at school or on the Disney Channel just at home.
Yeah.
That was something that my parents would just, you know, we could just, when we had the Disney Channel, we didn't always have cable, but when we did, you know, we were constantly watching some older films on the Disney Channel. So yeah, I saw it long time ago for the first time and hadn't watched it again for years and years and years until we watched it with our own kids.
Right. Yeah. Similarly, I don't remember when I saw it first. We were, we also, had cable on and off, and then we would get the Disney Channel. We never actually paid for the Disney Channel, but they would have those like trial weeks.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, of course, we had VHS tapes. We would break it out.
Tape
and
everything.
We'd tape everything. I'm pretty sure this is one of the ones we taped. And, you know, I saw it several times with our family, like you just mentioned. And I watched it with my brother a couple years ago, and we just cackled.
Yeah. Your brother is an adult man.
Yeah.
We should point out. Both, soon to be married.
Yes. We're both adults, but still loved it. Laughed quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then we saw it again a couple nights ago in preparation for this podcast. So one thing I wanted to mention, I said it earlier, but so Bill Walsh produced this. Robert Stevenson directed this film. They were frequent collaborators for Disney. Their most successful project, though, was Mary Poppins.
Of course.
Which received numerous Academy Award nominations. It also was a fantasy film. I'm not sure why we didn't pick that one.
Why didn't we watch Mary Poppins?
That would have probably been a pretty good one. But they also did the first two Herbie movies together.
I could see that, for sure.
One thing I wanted to mention before we really get started, Blackbeard. A little bit about Blackbeard.
Okay.
You and I watched a YouTube documentary.
You watched. I was around.
You were. Okay. So just so you understand that this movie, first of all, is based on very, very, very loosely on a true story, right? The story of Blackbeard. He lived from 1680 to 1718. He terrorized the eastern coast of the U.S., most notably the blockade of Charleston, South Carolina.
Right.
And you and I went there a few years ago and went on a...
Yeah, I was trying to think. It was like a trolley tour or a carriage tour. One of those historic city things you do. You pay your money and you hop on and ride around the town and learn some facts. They're always fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we did that. And they talked about Blackbeard in Charleston.
Yeah, so he did a major blockade of Charleston for a while. And really, you know, became feared because not only did he terrorize local ships, but he actually defeated the British naval ships from time to time.
Wow.
Which is highly unusual for a pirate ship to defeat the British Navy. And then, so just a few little things about him. He would occasionally shoot his own men, you know, just to remind everybody who was boss.
I was paying attention for that part of the documentary. It's like, what?
At one point, he decided he was going to settle down. He received a pardon from the governor of North Carolina if he would just stop being a pirate. And he had a little
just
land.
Just settle down and we'll leave you alone.
Exactly. He lived the kind of a life of a local celebrity, settling down and marrying a 16-year-old girl.
Yep, that sounds about right.
That didn't last very long because he got the itch to go out and do some more piracy. And keep in mind, he had robbed from the states, you know, all along the eastern seaboard.
Oh, so right.
Virginia and South Carolina were ticked at him. Meanwhile, the British government was very ticked at him.
Sure.
And so they banded together, they chased him down, and it led to Blackbeard's demise and eventually his beheading.
Oh, so they got him back.
They got him back, and what did I say? He was about 38 years old.
Yeah, he was young.
He was beheaded. They hung his head up on the mast of Lieutenant Maynard's ship of the Royal Navy.
Wow. So that brings a lot of credibility to Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean stories, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's very, you know, British against the pirates thing. Or,
very
you
much
know.
So.
Yeah.
So a few casting notes about this film. Peter Ustinov played Captain Blackbeard, and he did great. We'll talk about him in a little bit. There were a couple times I wondered, could this guy really kill people and, you know, do all these atrocious things?
Okay, so yeah, that brings up a good point, because I think we love, most especially American public, we love pirates, right? Pirates are fun. Yeah. We have a whole ride at Disney based on these pirates and then a whole series of movies, and they're just... they're the bad guys that you love. Right. I mean, they're even more likable than Darth Vader, right?
It seems like they, you know, rob people of their gold, they drink a lot of whiskey and rum, and then they shoot their pistols in the air.
Right. They're like Robin Hood, right? They steal from the rich and give to the poor being themselves.
Yeah.
But they just are always out having a good time.
Right.
We have a very romantic vision of pirates. But in reality, pretty terrifying and terrible people. I mean, like, he's just shooting people to prove the point that he can shoot people.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember hearing on the documentary, like, he grew out. I mean, the reason he started calling himself, and he did start calling himself Blackbeard, nobody else gave him that name, is because he literally just grew out all of his facial hair and then, like, braided it, twisted it, tied things in it. Like, he just looked like a big woolly booger of a man, you know, like.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're living...
He very much believed in both positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement.
Okay.
So if people obeyed him, he treated them well. So, like, if they did a blockade, you know, captured a ship and started robbing them, if they did what he said...
Acquiesced.
he wouldn't harm them. But the second that they gave any kind of, you know, rebellion towards him, like, it was off with your head. It was like, I'm going to make a public example of you.
Wow. Maybe our youngest child is a pirate.
No.
Sorry. Okay. Never mind. We'll come back to that another time.
And then somebody else I wanted to mention, because we are, you know, we do a lot of classic horror. So Elsa Lancaster, who plays Emily Stokroff, she was the Bride of Frankenstein from 1935.
Okay. Isn't she also in Mary Poppins?
She's in a bunch of those Disney films.
Okay.
That Darn Cat, Mary Poppins.
Yes. Her face is so familiar.
We typically see her as that older lady, right?
Right.
But she was the original Bride of Frankenstein.
Okay.
And so you can kind of see it in the eyes.
Yeah, she has those big, big round eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's another film we really like, Murder by Death.
Oh, Murder by Death is fantastic.
Yes.
That's not something we can cover on this podcast, huh?
I would like to, but yeah, it's more of just murder mystery.
It's not fantasy or horror or sci-fi.
Darn it. Oh, well. So let's explore the cast just a little bit.
Sure.
So we talked about Peter Ustinov. We talked about Elsa Lancaster. Dean Jones is really, I guess, our male lead in this film.
Yes. And if you grew up in the era that you and I grew up in, you have seen his face many a time in many a Disney make.
Yes. Including, like, the Love Bug.
Yes. Well, I don't know about all the Herbie movies, because there's a lot.
The first few,
But the first few, yes. A movie that I grew up loving and even inspired us to purchase our first dog as a couple, The Ugly Dachshund. He's the male lead in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where he sneaks a Great Dane puppy into his wife's litter of dachshund puppies. Which inspired me to, later in life, get a Great Dane, actual Great Dane.
So he's pretty much our male lead, and our female lead is played by Suzanne Pleshette. She plays Joanne Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And Suzanne Pleshette, I know from a few things, the old original Bob Newhart show.
Oh, right.
Did you ever see that?
A few times. It wasn't something we watched regularly growing up.
It was kind of before our time. You right. and I grew up on Newhart.
Right, exactly.
Which was his second, Bob Newhart's second really big show.
Yeah. So I didn't even know that until later in life.
Uh-huh. So I don't know. Can I do a spoiler about the Newhart show?
I don't know. Can you? Is there a spoiler?
Yeah. So Suzanne Plachet plays Bob Newhart's wife in the first show, the original show.
Okay.
And then he goes on to do a new show, the Newhart show, has a different wife, different life altogether.
Okay, so it's not connected to the original show.
Not at all.
Except for Bob Newhart's in it.
Exactly. But in the finale of the Newhart show, the last few minutes, he's back in wherever the original show took place. He wakes up, he's like, honey, I just had the craziest dream, you know, and he kind of gives a few little tidbits of the Newhart show, and the wife that leans up is not the wife from the Newhart show, but from the original show.
It's Plachet.
Suzanne Plachet.
Oh, that's funny.
It was such a clever little twist.
Yeah, that's a fun tie-in.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people were ticked, like, you mean that whole thing I just watched was a dream?
Right. How many seasons of that show? Well, again, she's one of those faces you would recognize if you grew up in the same era we grew up in. You know, isn't she the wife in The Ugly Dachshund also? I think she plays with Dean Jones a lot.
Maybe. Yeah, she's a regular in these films.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see her face a lot. And she's very likable.
Yeah, yeah. And she does great in this movie.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And then also, there's a guy named Joby Baker that plays Silky Seymour, our baddie.
He looks like a baddie. I don't recognize him from other things. Has he been in other things that I should know?
No, I didn't recognize him from anything else either.
He looks very slick. Like, his name should be Silky Seymour.
Yeah. And another baddie, not really a baddie, but he's the football coach, Mr. Purvis, played by Michael Conrad.
Oh.
He's another Disney regular. You would see him.
Yeah, his face was familiar.
That pretty much rounds out the cast. So something we're going to do different this year than we did last year...
Mm-hmm.
It's something called standouts and setbacks.
All right.
If you remember before, we had a different system.
What? High fives and something?
Yeah. High fives and low points.
That's it.
The reason why that didn't really strike a chord with us, originally we were going to do high fives and backhands.
No, it's too violent.
And we felt like, let's say for instance, we're doing a film with Jessica Tandy. And we said, she gets a backhand.
No,
you're going to be the biggest jerk in the world that gives a backhand to Jessica Tandy, right?
No.
So that's why we said, we can't do backhands. So we did high fives and low points. And I don't know, you and I are a sucker for alliteration.
Apparently.
And this is standouts and setbacks. So the same idea.
Standouts and setbacks. What do we got?
So the first standout I'll give for this film is obviously Peter Ustinov.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like you should have saved him for last, but let's talk about
it. Let's go ahead and get it out of the way.
Okay.
This movie is really a vehicle for his silly and physical comedy.
Yeah.
So he makes the most of it. His constant boasting of his exploits and greatness are really hilarious. But then it's kind of surprising, like, you know, he'll get his feelings hurt by things that Dean Jones has said to him. You know, or he'll get offended. And it's also just, it's all funny. It all just works.
It works. He can dish it out, but he can't take it, basically.
And you kind of get also, like, he's been alone for 200 years.
Right.
And it's just kind of crappy that the one person that can actually see him is this guy that doesn't want to have anything to do with him.
Right.
And I don't know. Do you want to give a little bit of background on that? Like, how...
Sure. So... Ustinov. All right. However we say his name, he is playing Blackbeard in this movie. Well, he's, you know, we've fast forwarded to the 1960s. Blackbeard was alive 200 years earlier. So when he died, one of his many wives that he had, one of them was apparently a witch or something. And she put a curse on him that once he dies, he's going to have to basically wander around and haunt the earth until he finally does something good. Because he's been a pirate his whole life. Like, he's not doing good things.
Yeah.
So, and she was tired of his piratey antics. So she said, you know what? You're never going to...
Well, and he put her to death.
Oh, that's right. And he... yeah, that's true. He had her burned. He turned her in for being a witch.
Yeah.
So I guess he was tired of that wife and said, I know how to get rid of her.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so he had her, I think, burned at the stake, if I remember correctly. And so on her stake, she basically put a curse on him and said, "You're cursed to be a ghost and wander this earth until you finally do something good with your life."
Yes.
So he's been, I guess, locked in a state of limbo for 200 years.
Uh-huh.
And it just so happens that Dean Jones's character wanders into town. Uh-huh. Takes up residence, gets a room at this hotel, at Blackbeard's old hotel, and bids on this bed warming pan, which is a very antiquated piece of equipment, just to help. He knows the old ladies are going to lose their hotel if they don't, you know, if something doesn't happen. So he
And he wants to impress the Miss Baker, Suzanne Plachette's character.
That's right. That's right. Miss Baker, who's also going to work at the college that the whole reason Dean Jones came to town is to take this job as a track coach at this college.
Right.
So Miss Plachette's character works at the college. She's beautiful. He wants to impress her. He bids on one of these things at auction and he accidentally sits on it and breaks the handle and finds this mysterious piece of paper in the handle of the bed warmer.
Right.
So he starts reading the words on it and it sounds kind of Latin-y mumbo jumbo something, right? And unwittingly he says a spell that unlocks Blackbeard's trapped soul from limbo, but he's the only one that can now see Blackbeard's ghost.
Yes.
Because he's the one who read the, and apparently Blackbeard is going to have to just torture poor Dean Jones for the rest of his life unless he can do something to set the record straight.
Right, right.
So I guess all of his 38 years of piracy, of course, I guess he didn't come out of the womb being a pirate, but whatever. Right. All of his 38 years of piracy can be undone by one act of kindness and goodwill.
Apparently. Well, that was the curse. Yeah.
That was the curse, yes.
That was the curse.
I think I've mentioned the Enneagram before. Like, if you're a, you know, if you subscribe to these personality type tests, I would say Coach Walker is a one, if there ever was a one.
Oh, yeah.
And Blackbeard's ghost or Blackbeard himself is a seven. Maybe all pirates, sevens or eights. I don't know. Like, they just want to party or they just want to, like,
and so, I don't know, a one rape has and pillage. To have things done the right way.
Exactly.
And everything has to, either thing.
Everything's black and white.
Black and white.
And you're going to do the right thing regardless of what else is going on in life. You will do the right thing.
And then what did you say Blackbeard was?
Blackbeard, I'd say, is a seven because he is out to have a good time.
Yes.
We're not going to deal with emotions or problems. Like, we just keep moving ahead to the next funnest,
from one party thing to the next.
That's right. I say we like I'm a seven. I am not a seven.
No. So Peter Ustinov gets a standout. Also, we mentioned Elsa Lancaster before. I felt like she provided us the creepiest scenes in this film. And maybe this is young Jeff talking.
Yeah, because there's literally nothing creepy about this. It's just fun. But I could see if you were a kid watching this, it had just enough of that Disney creep to it.
Well, there's a scene where she's doing a palm reading for Mr. Walker. She sees his future and just really freaks out on him after she's been calling him Ishmael.
Right.
And then later on, when she's setting him up with his room, she tells us the story of Alditha Teach, which is the 10th wife, the witch wife of Blackbeard. Of course, just so everybody knows, you don't have to look it up. There was no Alditha Teach.
That was Disney's creation.
That was a Disney thing. But
Edward Teach was a real person. He was a real pirate.
But she's the one that tells us this story. But by the way, I did love her portrait. It looks so menacing.
Oh, Alditha's portrait. Yes. Yeah. In Blackbeard's bedroom at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a creepy. It looks like it could have come from a Hammer horror movie, honestly. Yeah. That portrait could have been hanging on a wall in one of the Hammer horror movie sets.
Yes. So I think it would go well in our home.
No.
Maybe not.
You're always wanting to put creepy things in here.
But anyway, so she goes into full, like, cackling witch mode, Elsa does, when she's telling the, she's actually reciting the curse verbatim to Mr. Walker.
Right.
And that's how he knows what the words of the curse were, because she knew it off the top of her head. And goes into full acting mode. And anyway,
it was almost like she was channeling Alditha Teach for a moment.
Yeah, it was really good.
For sure.
I felt like this film had a lot of great physical comedy.
It's chock full of it, yeah.
And it produced genuine laughs. I mentioned my brother and I watching it a couple years ago. A lot of the laughs were around just the silly shenanigans that take place.
Right.
You know, we talked about before Blackbeard places this bet. He places a bet on the track team of Godolphin, and that's the college that Mr. Walker coaches at.
Yes, the local college, and they are terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
they're the laughing stock, right?
Oh, and, I mean, this, like, you meet in the first little bit of the movie, we meet the captain of the track team, and he is this tiny, frail little human. And so you're thinking, okay, well, he's a sprinter, he's a long jumper, he's a, maybe not a sprinter, because they're usually kind of muscly. Maybe he's a high jumper or something, pole vaulter. Mm. And we find out, no, he's the shot putter. Like, you're thinking hulking mass of a human to throw a heavy, I don't know, they look like cannonballs. I don't know what they are, shot puts, but yeah. And he's their captain and he's the shot putter. And he is about as big around as my ankle.
Yeah. Little tiny guy. Anyway, so they have this, what they call the Broxton Relay. They have four colleges compete. Three are serious track squads. Right. And then Godolphin's is kind of like the laughing stock.
Yeah.
Of course, all this physical comedy comes into play where Blackbeard, of course, no one can see Blackbeard but the coach. He helps the team win, right?
Right. And,
he does all sorts of shenanigans, just crazy little things to help him win. But
oh my gosh.
But you know, that there's also where Blackbeard goes and helps them win at the roulette table. And then also when they fight off Mr. Seymour's goons later, all of this is just real physical, funny comedy.
Yes. Involving an unseen ghost that only one guy can see. So
yeah.
It's just funny, silly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good stuff. I'd say the high point of this for me is just, it falls in a comfort zone. Like mm-hmm. I said, it's one of those that I saw as a kid. It would play regularly, I think, on the Disney Channel, or I saw it, you know, with my third grade class or whatever, for whatever reason at school. Mm-hmm. And so Disney had this way, and I think some other directors and producers out there do this too. Even people like Wes Anderson, and we've talked about, what's the old Jewish guy's name?
Mm-hmm.
Woody.
Mm-hmm. Woody Allen.
Yeah, yeah. Woody Allen does this too. Like they find these actors that almost act as muses for them, you know, and they recast them over and over again. We get very comfortable with those people. And I feel like from my childhood, it's these Disney actors, you know, the Dean Jones and the, Plachette. A lot of the faces you see in this movie are people that I just saw over and over again in my childhood. So it's mm-hmm. just like, it's almost like a warm, comforting blanket that's mm-hmm. a bit silly, you know? Yeah, and, you know, it takes
makes you
right
feel
back
like
to
a kid, right?
Yeah, it takes you right back to childhood when you watch these movies.
Yeah, no, I agree. So the second part of this are the setbacks, things that maybe, you know, you didn't love about the film.
Okay, yeah.
And I struggled with this a little bit because, you know, it is what it is, right? It's not like a super serious film.
Right, right. We weren't expecting this to be some artistic, I don't know,
masterpiece or whatever. Yeah, but yeah. So Dean Jones, we mentioned playing Mr. Walker. He does a great job playing the part.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
But I don't know, watching it with 2022 eyes, for me, he seems like a wet blanket a lot until the very end.
Yeah.
And for me, it got a little grating. I don't know, that he didn't understand the situation for what it was, right? I felt like in 2022, if you had this, I don't know, they probably would have leveraged it a little more and said, wait a minute, I have an advantage in life. There's something here. I have all these problems. And it took him a lot longer than it took us, the viewer, to come to this conclusion.
Right, right. Our mindset is now, you know, all we do is win. That's what should be happening, right? So we know a ghost. We got to use this ghost to our advantage. I mean, that's a very 21st century mindset.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't know. I didn't see him as much of a wet blanket. That is kind of just Dean Jones's character, though. If you think about him, like, he's the hapless, like, husband that can never do anything right in The Ugly Dachshund too. You know, that's just kind of who he is. And it's a little bit that way in Herbie.
Uh-huh.
That's just kind of who he is, I think. But I can also see it from, what was this, 1968?
Mm-hmm.
From the perspective of, you know, I think, I don't know, I wasn't alive in the 60s, but probably if you're making family films in that era, like, the upstanding guy is the guy who's always going to do what's right, you mm-hmm. know, not necessarily what's going to let him win, but what's right. And so mm-hmm. even though, yes, Blackbeard eventually is going to help the old ladies keep their inn, he's doing things in a not righteous way, right? Like, he wants to cheat to win.
Right.
And we love him and think that's funny and hilarious. He's a pirate, and pirates are lovable and great, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just whatever. But Dean Jones's character was like, that's still not right. Two wrongs don't make a right. He's very straight-laced. Right. He's very much a one on the Enneagram.
Oh, he even said, like, what am I going to do for a second act?
Well, yeah, that's true. Because he's like, even after he lets the pirate help him win, they get the money, they save the inn for the old ladies. He's
the track team is still lousy.
Yeah, the track team is still terrible, even though they managed to win this competition with a little, you know, supernatural help.
Right.
He's like, well, And by the way, spoiler, mm-hmm. Blackbeard's character is now released because he actually did something good to help somebody. So the curse is broken and he gets to go off into oblivion or wherever pirates go. And so what's Dean Jones going to do now? What's Coach Walker going to do? Like, he can't make this team that's horrible not be horrible without the help of a ghost that's gone.
Yeah.
And so he's going to lose face in this community. So he's got to go.
Yeah. No, that's true. So, yeah, like I said, I don't know. This one, I was on the fence on that one. And the second one, too, I'm a little on the fence. But it's a little hard to believe that Silky Seymour, our baddie in this film, is the guy that has his grip on this town.
That's true. I agree with this.
He doesn't do anything to show that he's tough or evil. He just seems kind of wimpy and slimy. But
he definitely seems slimy, and he looks the part if you're going for that, you know, quintessential mob boss type guy. He looks very slick.
Yeah.
But this is like this little coastal town on the edge of the Carolinas somewhere. And, you know, he just, like, how did this guy get here? Why is he here? Right. Like, he looks like a New York City slicker mob boss kind of guy. Yeah.
Yeah, Chicago gangster or something like that. Yeah,
why is he here? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
But, and this is, the other thing that makes him not very believable in the town is that his whole purpose for needing to take this in from the old ladies is because there's like a legal loophole because the inn's kind of on this little island.
Uh-huh.
And so gambling's not, what do we call that? Illegal.
Right.
On this little island. So he can turn it into this like destination casino and not get in trouble.
Right.
But he clearly has everybody in this town gambling anyhow. Like they're not, it's not like business is bad for him because he doesn't have this in. It's just a little, I don't know.
It's all in the shadows and, you know.
But it's not very in the shadows. It's like right in the main restaurant in the town. There's a door, not a hidden door, just a door. You go in there and you gamble.
Yeah, but it's in a restaurant. He wants a big fancy casino like they have out west, you know. So he wants the big lights and
he doesn't want it hidden away.
Yeah. And a lot of it's ego, right?
Yeah, sure. Sure, I get that. He just, I don't know, he seemed like a misfit for the whole town, the whole scenario.
He was almost like just written in so they had something to do.
Right. We needed a bad guy to defeat.
We needed some bad guy. All right, we'll write this guy in.
Who would want to take the old ladies in and why would they want to take it?
Yeah.
Well, maybe this guy wants to make it into a casino.
Yeah.
Right, so Bedknobs and Broomsticks, another Disney live-action movie made just a few years after Blackbeard's Ghost, 1971, in fact. This one, it kind of, if you're a Lewis fan, you're going to recognize a little bit of this backstory because it's kind of like the Narnia series.
Yes.
We've got World War II happening. Children are being shipped out of the city of London to the countryside to get away from the bombing, from the attacks from the Germans. And so we were instantly transported to this little English countryside town. I think it's on an island, actually. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's boats when at the end of the movie when the Nazis are leaving. So I don't know.
I thought they could just be at the coast of England, right?
Maybe they're on the coast. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, we have Angela Lansbury playing an apprentice witch who has to reluctantly take on a set of three siblings in her almost a manor house. I know it's like a country house, but it's pretty large and rambling for her to live there alone. Anyhow, she lives by herself. She's needed. She doesn't really want to, but she's needed to take on some of these kids that are coming from the city. And so she gets, Charlie, Carrie, and Paul, I think is the little brother's name, to come and live in her house. Well, they find out, and we don't really get the backstory.
Right.
Most of the other kids that were being shipped to the country is, of course, their parents are serving in the war somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, they just need to get them out of harm's way. But it kind of seems like these are orphans.
Yeah.
They don't have parents. Even the oldest brother, Charlie, definitely has some street smarts that he probably wouldn't have had if he were being raised in a normal home. So they realize that Angela Lansbury character, Mrs. Price, is a witch, or at least trying to be a witch. And so he's going to hold that over her head to, you know, make life a little better for himself. Basically, he's going to blackmail her.
Right.
But then they find out, like, well, that's not really going to work. And she has been taking these correspondence courses, Mrs. Price has, to become a witch, and she hasn't finished. She wants to help in the war effort, too. And she thinks if she finishes her correspondence course, she'll have this final... I don't know. What do you call it?
Spell.
Spell. Thank you. Yeah. She'll get this final spell from her correspondence course to be able to help stop the war.
Right.
And in particular, help her own little town that she lives in stop a Nazi invasion.
Yeah.
So the kids end up helping her. They end up meeting the guy who plays Mr. Banks, the dad in Mary Poppins.
Right.
He's supposedly Professor Brown that's been sending her her correspondence courses. Really, he's a fraud.
Yeah.
He's a, you know... What do you call those people? A huckster.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a huckster is what he is, right?
But
anyhow, a friendship ensues. A little makeshift family happens. They do end up defeating the Nazis. And she does actually have magic in the end and learns to use things.
Oh, yeah. And it turns out that he had gotten these spells from half of a book that he had.
That's right. He found at the market.
And so they go on a quest to look for the other half. They find the other half. And they're looking for this last spell, you know, this great spell that's going to end the war. And then it leads them to a cartoon world.
Yes.
So there's this whole middle segment where they're interacting, live action characters are interacting with cartoon
it's
characters.
It's very Mary Poppins-like when they jump into the paintings in Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Well, it's like they I don't know, transport into cartoon world. They're under the ocean and then they're on an island. Mm-hmm. It looks, and the all of the animation looks very similar to Robin Hood, the Disney animated Robin Hood.
Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, Sword in the Stone. It's from that same genre.
So it's called, obviously we get the broomsticks because there's a witch, but the bed knobs. Do you want to explain the whole bed knob thing?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So when the kids are still trying to suss this lady out, right? They're trying to figure out, like, do we want to stay with her? We want to get back to London. We don't want to be taken care of by this weird old lady. She makes them a promise, right? That she's going to take care of them. And if things don't work out, like, they want some collateral. They want something from her that's worth something.
Right.
So she, the little brother, has taken the bed knob off of the railing to the bed that they, of the room they'd been sleeping in her house. He just unscrewed it. So she said, oh, that'll work perfect. So she basically casts a spell on it and it becomes a locomotion spell. So he can screw the knob back into, I guess it's the, is it the headboard or the footboard of the bed?
Yeah, the footboard. Yeah.
Yeah. He can screw it back in, say some things, tap it the right way or whatever, and it will transport them wherever they want to go. So if they need to get back to London and they're done with this lady, they can go back to London.
Yeah.
But of course, then they have to use that bed to do all the other things that they have to do in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Travel from this place to that.
And yeah.
One of them, that cartoon world, the island of Naboombu, I think is what it was
Naboombu.
Called.
Naboombu. That's right.
This whole story was based on a publication by Mary Norton called The Magic Bed Knob.
Oh.
And then later, a couple years later, she created a book called Bonfires and Broomsticks.
Oh.
And then the two children's books were combined into one, Bed Knob and Broomsticks, in 1957.
Okay.
And this is pretty cool. They originally offered the role of Miss Price to Julie Andrews.
Oh, yes. Coming right off of that Mary Poppins fame.
Yes. And originally, Julie Andrews declined, and so they went on and found Angela Lansbury, got her degree.
Okay.
Well, eventually...
Another musical theater, great.
Oh, yeah. I do... you know, we talked about this. I do think Julie Andrews would have been better.
Oh, sure.
If you were to compare the two.
She's the queen.
Yeah. I mean, she's just so good. She would have done this, knocked it out of the park. And then also, Peter Ustinov was considered for the role of Professor Brown.
So we could have had Blackbeard as Professor Brown. That would have been fun.
But they got Angela Lansbury, and she was good. You know, she was fine. We all know her, of course, from Murder, She Wrote. That was a big crime
Sweeney
drama.
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
If you go way back, she's a theater great.
Yeah, she was in Sweeney Todd, the original theater production. Okay.
I believe so.
I remember seeing her in The Picture of Dorian Gray, and that was in 1945. Nanny McPhee, we saw her 2005. She looked ancient in that, but they had her.
She was in Nanny McPhee?
She was in Nanny McPhee. She was like, she looked super, super old.
I don't even remember her in that.
And she's still alive, right?
I think so.
The role people will remember her for is in Murder, She Wrote, right?
Yes.
She was nominated for 10 Golden Globe Awards and 12 Emmys.
Wow. That's cool, amazing. Huh? All right. I did some quick Googling. She is still alive and she is 96.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's basically one of the last surviving stars from the golden age of Hollywood cinema.
Yeah. And then our male lead is played by David Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he passed away in the year 2000.
Mm.
But he's primarily remembered for the role of George Banks in Mary Poppins.
Right. He's the dad.
Right, right. And then he was also in The Love Bug. And then, of course, in this film, he's Dr. or Professor Emilius Brown.
That's right. Old Professor Brown, the shyster.
Yes. And, of course, this film, we mentioned before, it's noted for its blend of cartoon characters with live-action actors. So Walsh and Stevenson did the same thing in Mary Poppins in 64. Some of the other notables, I thought I would call out Space Jam, 1996.
Oh, these are animation blended with live action.
Yes, yes. The one that was big when we were growing up, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Incredible Mr. Limpet. Those were
I don't think I ever saw that.
Don Knotts, he's like gets turned into a dolphin or a fish or something.
Oh, I don't think I ever saw that.
Yeah. Oh, it's pretty good. It's pretty really. Fun. It's Don Knotts humor, right?
So. Hey, Enchanted. That's more recent. We watched that with our kids when they were younger.
No, that's true.
That had animation and live action. I kind of like that. I like that movie actually. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
What do they call him? McDreamy in it.
A McDreamy, yeah, yeah. Patrick Dempsey.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a Grey's Anatomy fan, you call him McDreamy, McSteamy. I don't know. I never watched Grey's Anatomy, so whatever.
And I don't keep up with that stuff. All right, as far as standouts and setbacks, the first standout I'll call out, the special effects.
Yeah.
So we already mentioned the cartoon animation mixed with live action, reminiscent of Robin Hood and Sword in the Stone and stuff.
Yes.
That was all very cool and fun. But then there are also these segments where they have their, what do they call it? Suspended locomotion or something?
I think that was the substitutionary locomotion.
That's what it was.
That was her spell she needed to help defeat the Nazis.
Yes. So she casts a spell on like her closet, right?
Right.
And so Mr. Brown goes dancing with her nightgown.
Yeah.
Or he gets into a fight with a pair of gloves.
Right.
All of that looked great.
Oh, it really did. It was very convincing. I'm curious as to how they managed to make that happen, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was really cool stuff. So I thought it was really convincing, especially for 1971.
Oh, yeah. Well, then she gets to reanimate the whole, there's like a castle with a museum in it in their town, and it's full of all of this armor from the Middle Ages, reanimates the whole cavalry, basically, and uses that cavalry to chase out the Nazis from their town.
Oh, so, yeah.
It looked really cool, like those horses with the horse armor, but there's no horse there. I mean, it really had a good look to it.
It did. You didn't see any hokey strings or anything going on. Like, no. It looked real.
It looked nice, yeah.
So one thing they tell you as when you get into directing
right.
is don't work with kids or animals. Like, basically.
Because you're going to get upstaged, right?
Yeah, yeah. Things aren't going to go well for you. But that's not true of this film, right? The kids do great in this film, especially the oldest, Charlie.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before he sees Miss Price flying around on a broom and decides to blackmail her. He's decided to use the old loaf.
Yeah.
Talking about his brain, which is hilarious. He said he'd like to see the occasional sausage on the table.
He's got a great Cockney. I mean, I'm sure it's his real accent because this is just chock full of British actors, but his accent is so fabulous.
It's hilarious. I love it. He could use some lolly.
Yeah. He's like basically he was bribing her, blackmailing her.
Yeah, he wanted a little money.
And she was feeding them, I guess because she's a witch, she eats things like roots and vegetables and whatnot. And so he was like, no, I'd like to see a sausage on the table and a little spending money, lady.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to tell everybody you're a witch.
Yeah. Basically, all the kids did great. Like, they weren't...
They were fantastic, yeah.
Yeah.
They were really the highlight of the movie.
Yeah, they really, really were. And actually, we could have used some more Charlie dialogue, the oldest kid, I felt.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about it. Once Mr. Banks comes onto the scene, and I know he's Dr. Brown.
I say, yeah, film. He's not Mr. Professor Banks Brown. In this movie. Professor Brown, once he comes on the screen, yeah, we get less and less of the oldest boy.
Yeah.
And he really is a fantastic character actor.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to make room for Professor Melly. Brown. Yes.
But yeah, so I would say they definitely, the kids' performances are basically a big standout.
For sure, for sure. I know that this probably gets a lot of flack, but the scene that I remembered loving as a kid, and probably because I grew up in Florida and I loved It's a Small World, some people may laugh at that, but I always loved that ride at Disney. The Portobello Road scene, they take a ride on the bed and go to Portobello Road to the market because they're looking for the other half of the spell book that's mm-hmm. missing, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Portobello Road's, I guess, famously known for this giant market. And so they take, like, a classic musical theater break here, right?
Uh-huh.
And have all these, like, repeating dance scenes. So mm-hmm. all the different cultures that would be in Portobello Road market selling their wares show up and get a little few minute dance scene. So there's, I mean, we see kind of, it's kind of like a smattering of the British Empire, basically, right? We see the Indian, I don't know the right terminology.
They look like Sikhs.
Yeah, they did look like Sikhs with the head wraps, and they're in their British uniform, and they do their dance. And then there's definitely Caribbean Islanders.
Like Jamaican or something.
The Jamaicans, yeah, that would have been, because, you know, the sun never set on the British Empire at
that's right.
one time in our history. And so there's just all these different cultural representations in the market. And I just, yeah. I like that. I love travel, world travel and all that sort of thing. So it's just fun. It's just, yeah. I don't know, an indulgent romp in the middle of the movie. It was kind
right,
of fun.
Right. No, it was definitely fun. And then also, as far as standouts, you mentioned this, and I'll let you talk to this, but basically, it felt like there were a lot of links to Harry Potter in this film, right?
Well, I wonder about that, and I probably should save this for our summation, because I always come up with questions when I watch these things, especially mm-hmm. ones that I've seen at a younger age and now as an adult, and I'm like, oh, huh, I didn't think about that this way. But, you know, if you're a Harry Potter fan, as I am, mm-hmm. And you read J.K. Rowling's writings, obviously, she's a British writer who was raised reading the writings of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. You see that all through her books. Yeah. And it's fabulous. It's a fabulous heritage. The British writing scene is, you know, mm-hmm. hard to be reckoned with. I love British writing. But when I watched this, I thought, gosh, I wonder if Rowling didn't watch this as a kid, too,
mm-hmm.
And get some inspiration here. Because there's just, the kids being kind of mentored by this woman, she's sending away for classes to become correspondence classes to become a witch. So you've got that whole like witch's school thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in general, in most cinema, witchcraft is kind of looked at as like evil and
or
dark.
Yeah. And this is very fun.
This is like, a sense of whimsy about this film.
Yeah, exactly. A sense of whimsy. I love that. So I just wonder how much of this Rowling was accustomed to or influenced her in any way. Because there were definitely, like, these are lovable, likable characters, and that's mm-hmm. very much in the Harry Potter vein. Of course there's bad guys and there's darkness, but then there's the good side. That's just light and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's, I don't know, it felt very, where she lived felt very Hogwarts, Hogsmeade, that whole scene there.
Yeah.
The Weasleys could have been her neighbors, basically. Right. You know, Mrs. Price's neighbors. So I'm just curious if anybody has any knowledge, let me know.
Yeah.
I love little random facts like
JK,
that.
JK, if you want to reach out to us.
Yeah.
Let
JK
us know.
Rowling, if you're listening to our podcast, did you watch Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
She might be a big fan.
Maybe she is. Maybe she watched it with her kids. I think she's a smidge older than we are. So,
well, those are the standouts as far as setbacks. One thing I'll mention, and we criticize a lot of films from the 20th century for this, but basically there's zero chemistry between our leads.
Right? Oh, that's very true.
And I felt like there's this weird half-baked romance that was cooked up for this film.
Can we call it a romance even? It's like a mutual, symbiotic relationship. I don't even know that it's a romance.
Yeah, I picked up on zero romance between Miss Price and Dr. Brown, or Professor Brown. I don't know why I keep calling him Doctor. He's a shyster. He's not really a professor
but
either.
But he's a lovable shyster.
He is. But, you know, there's no hint of it at all. Nowhere at all until, you know, the lady shows up that's basically going to say, you know, I'm going to take these kids and reassign them to another home for you. And they're like, well, can't we just stay here? Mr. Brown can be our dad. You can be our mom.
Right.
And it's like, it hadn't even occurred to them that maybe they could be a family.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of clunkily thrown together.
I think we give a lot of grace to Angela Lansbury character and Mr. Brown's character, because Mrs. Price and Professor Brown, because we already have a built-in relationship with them from other things.
Yeah.
You know, like we know them, we like them, you know, so we give them some grace in that area. But you're right, the actual relationship was not there.
No. And there's this weird scene.
Oh, yeah.
When he decides to leave, he's going to go sleep at this train station. And he's having like this mental dialogue. What's wrong with you? You could be in a warm home now, right now. But instead, you're out on this park bench. And he looks out on the train track and he kind of visualizes Angela Lansbury in like this magician's assistant outfit.
Right.
And she's walking. And it was just like, it was very strange.
Okay, I wish I could go back to my childhood self and think about what I thought when I saw that. Because I don't even know that I would have had a context to put that in. Because now as an adult, I'm like, wait, you're either seeing her, this is supposed to be like a sexy costume you're seeing her in.
Yeah.
Or you're just seeing that she would be useful to you. If you went back on the road as a traveling magician and she really can do magic, she's going to boost ticket sales, right?
Like,
and in nowhere in my adult mind can I see Angela Lansbury as like the femme fatale here, right? Like, she's an old lady that solves
you are
murders.
Canceled. We're canceling Kim.
I'm sorry, 96-year-old Angela Lansbury. I love you. I do.
You're right.
But it was weird to see. For me to think of her, like, what is he seeing her as? Like, he's seeing her as, like, she's going to help me make money. Or he's seeing her as, like, you know, he's into her in a sexy costume. And I'm like,
We see her as old lady Jessica Fletcher from Murder, She Wrote.
Exactly.
And she's in this weird costume trying to look sexy all of a sudden. It just felt like wrong. Bam, bam, bam. Shouldn't be happening right
now. Yeah, it was. And she was walking on the train track. I mean, it's a hallucination, but she's walking on the train track with a little parasol. Like she's a tightrope walker or something. I don't know. That took a weird turn, for sure.
It was a little odd.
Yeah. Well, and I think to your point, like the lack of chemistry there, the lady from the town agency that's helping home these children and get them out of the city, she, like you said, she comes to say, hey, we know you didn't really want to keep these kids. We found Farmer so-and-so is going to take them off your hands. And you can tell, like, Angela Lansbury's a little bit like, oh, wait, but actually I like these kids now. The kids are the real actors here. Like, they really are heartbroken. Yeah. The little girl's crying. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, you can't. Like, we love it here. This is our family now.
Yeah.
And the kids want Professor Brown to be their dad. And he's like, no, I think I better go.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, there wasn't really even a space for him to be torn.
Right.
Or to contemplate, like, oh, wait, maybe I love these kids and I love this lady. Like, he's just kind of like, meh.
He runs.
I'm out. I think I better get back on the road. And that was it.
But even later, at the end of the film, you know, so they defeat the Nazis and all this stuff, right? He goes off to war. Like, he's in, like, a young soldier's outfit.
Yeah, he decides he's going to, like, stop doing his shyster professory things.
Yeah.
And join the cause and go fight the Nazis. He's clearly too old to be joining the army.
Yeah.
He's almost as old. What we haven't mentioned is there's this little band of former World War I vets that live in this village. And they're wearing their uniforms and marching around town. And they actually think they're the ones that run off the Nazis at the end of the film. But
it was played for laughs, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. But Professor Brown looks almost as old as those guys.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a young guy.
No.
The army doesn't want you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be an ageist here, but it's unrealistic.
Yeah. You know, the whole, you know, back to the love story thing, though, like, so they've defeated the Nazis. This could be their chance. They could be a family. And guess what? He signs up for the military.
Yeah, he runs again. Yeah, he does. He runs again. He doesn't stay and help raise these kids.
It just felt like, all right, well, it's Disney. We need a man and a woman to be in love, and we need some kids. So,
but, you know, Disney only likes single parents, so maybe that was
Maybe that's what it was.
I don't know.
Well, okay. So the last setback I'll throw out.
Yeah.
Is you're dealing with probably the most fearsome force in natural history, and that's the Nazis, right?
Right, right.
Like, we came very close to being ruled by, you know, this racist,
yeah,
awful...
a lot of the world could be speaking German today.
Right, right. And what was funny about this film is you never felt a sense of danger from the Nazis. They never harm anybody. I thought, I get it's a kid's movie, but it was a little funny that, like, they put the cloth over the dude's face when they're invading the town. They don't kill him. They basically just, like,
knock him out. Yeah, with ether or something.
You know, they seem awfully friendly for being Nazis.
They are less menacing than the Nazis in Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah, they
and
really
are. And those Nazis were stupid, you know? Like, and again, maybe that goes back to the whole, like, this really is built to be a kid's movie, and so maybe Disney didn't want to terrify kids. But this came out in, what, 71? We're pretty far removed from World War II, so... I don't really understand the kind of dumbing down of what the Nazis were.
Yeah. And if you watch The Defeat, it reminded me of Home Alone.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
So, like, all there's basically goofy hijinks happening.
Right. We've got a reanimated army of knights in armor, you know, invisible horses and knights. So just chainmail clinking around that chases off the Nazi army. And they get in their little boats and
Nazis may have a
speed
machine
paddle
gun.
Their way across the channel or wherever they were going.
There's absolutely zero sense of danger here.
Right.
You don't ever really think of the Nazis as being too bad.
No, there's no
And Nazis should be bad.
Here.
Right. I mean, that's like...
Yeah, historically, Nazis are bad. Nazis are bad.
Okay, so we discussed Blackbeard's Ghost, we discussed Bedknobs and Broomsticks. This was our Disney double feature week. Very cool. Let's talk about our final summations. Yay or nay, what say ye, Kim? And why don't we just do them one at a time?
So we're just talking Blackbeard's Ghost right now? Well, it's a yay for me. And, you know, it's fun, it's wholesome. It takes me right back to my childhood. You know, you're getting a cheap popsicle or some popcorn after field day at school, watching this with your class, or, you know, home on a Saturday evening with the family.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's just fun. It's one of those good time movies. There's really... Is it totally believable? No, but that's not the point of this movie. No.
No.
So, and there's a little bit of... doing something outside of yourself and doing something to help someone else in that movie too. So, there, you know,
good
is there
message,
maybe
really?
A little bit of moralizing in a good way? I think so. There's a little bit of something there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. So I mentioned my brother and I watching this and just, you know, cackling, you know, so he's in his 30s. I'm in my 40s.
Exactly.
It's a lot of fun. You can watch it with your kids. I definitely recommend watching with your kids, but if you don't have kids and you just want to watch it, it's still fun.
Yeah.
Why not? It's a good time.
Stop watching episodes of whatever garbage is currently on and watch one of these just for some lighthearted, like, better times. Probably it's putting on, what do you call that? Rose-colored glasses, I think.
Yeah.
But it's fun to do that.
Now, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, I'll go ahead and start us off on that. You know, one thing you have to go into this knowing it's 100% a kid's film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mentioned Blackbeard's Ghost. I think adults can watch that and they'd be just fine. They'd laugh. It would be funny. Bedknobs and Broomsticks. I think you kind of have to be a kid to really, really like this film.
Yeah.
Or you're watching it through that nostalgic lens.
Right.
Because, you know, I kind of felt like, I didn't enjoy, I will tell you this. I didn't enjoy this one as much as the last film.
Sure. I could see that.
I felt like it got a little boring in a few places. Some of the scenes ran long. The whole soccer scene, for instance, when they're island of Naboombu, like it just seemed to go on forever.
That was lengthy, yes.
But, you know, should you watch it? I think it's a good watch if you have kids, you want to sit down and watch it with them, or if you want to relive the past a little bit, have a sense of nostalgia.
Right.
If you don't have kids and you didn't see it before, I think you could probably miss this one and you'd probably be okay.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm going to give it a yay. Not an astounding yay or a shout it from the rooftops yay. But again, I love that nostalgic factor and that it's lighthearted. Maybe a little too lighthearted when mm-hmm. we're dealing with Nazis and yeah. veterans. But, you know, it's a fun, relaxing, just kind of a silly watch. And I will say this, if you're a parent and you need to entertain some kids and be able to kind of check out and do some other things while mm-hmm. you're in the same vicinity, this right. is a great movie to do that with because you can skip through some of those longer scenes and you're not missing anything.
Yeah.
It's okay if you tune out and balance the checkbook while they're playing soccer with an animated lion on Naboomboo.
Right.
So it gets a yay out of nostalgia and out of parental usability.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can throw this on with your kids and not worry.
Yeah.
They'll be entertained. All right. We did get some mail on these two films.
Okay.
J.B. McNamee said, I liked Bedknobs and Broomsticks as a kid, but didn't care for it as an adult. Stinks getting older.
So true. So true.
Right there with you. The Queen of the Hop says, Bedknobs is such a wild movie, LOL, but it's so charming and entertaining, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is charming. I'll give it that. Not as charming as Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
But it's still charming in its own right.
Yeah, maybe we should have done Mary Poppins, but who knows?
We can still watch Mary Poppins.
We can maybe later this year. Joff Zuckerman said, good choice on Blackbeard's Ghost.
Yes.
And then we do want to give a special shout out to Dead City Drive-In. They gave us the tip-off here. I'll read. Rewatched this not too long ago, talking about Blackbeard's Ghost. Those 60s live-action Disney staples, Dean Jones, Elsa Lancaster, Peter Ustinov. How about a double feature of this movie in Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
They gave us the idea. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. That was great. So this is a lot of fun to do these two films together.
Hey, when you're feeling crummy with COVID for the week, these were good movies to watch too.
They were.
If you're stuck at home with COVID or some other nastiness going on in your house, these are nice, lighthearted. I tend to get sucked into the hole of I'm just going to watch a bunch of murder mysteries or Law and Order, old Law and Order episodes or something. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really help your mental attitude when you're already feeling sick. So these were nice, uplifting things to watch.
They were.
While I was feeling gross.
Oh, yeah. And then our good friend, Boney Maloney, sent us a message.
Boney!
She's on Instagram, Jennifer Maloney. She said about Bedknobs and Broomsticks, one of my favorites.
Yay! You should have come down here and watched it with us, Boney. We miss you.
But she couldn't have because we had COVID.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
But anyway.
When we don't have COVID, come back and watch it with us.
What was funny, though, last time we saw Boney was in Charleston.
That's true. That's when we did that tour. Yeah. That is very true. That's crazy.
Well, very cool. So what are we watching next week?
All right. Next week, we will be watching a trio of horror stories starring Boris Karloff. This is the 1963 Black Sabbath. There's a story concerning a stalked call girl, a vampire-like monster who preys on his own family, and a nurse who is haunted by her ring's rightful owner.
Ooh.
And apparently you can watch that with the Shudder streaming service.
Yes, which we do have. It's only like $6 a month.
Okay.
If you're a horror fan, I think you can spring the $6.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of stuff out there. Right.
Yeah. So are we going to watch Ozzy Osbourne too then? And some heavy metal?
The name of this movie is Black Sabbath, but it has nothing to do with Ozzy Osbourne, except I think we do find out that it might actually have something to do with Ozzy Osbourne after the fact.
Yes. Yes. So we'll talk more about that next week.
Okay.
So, hey, what did you think about our first weekend for season two?
It's good to be back.
Yeah, it is good to be back.
We're probably still knocking the rust off, but and the COVID. Sorry if you hear some coughing in the background.
And we'll do Black Sabbath next week. Can't wait.
All right. Enjoy your movie watching, guys.
Take care, guys. Peace out.
Peace out.